It is my honor to introduce to you guys Ty. His sobriety day is 9/11/1988. Yes, 25 years older. He was born and raised in Tulare, and he has two beautiful daughters. They're 11 and 8. So please give him a big, big welcome.
Hi, I'm Ty Alcoholic.
Hey,
oh, man. You know, I was telling Nora earlier that in my 25 years of sobriety, and Tim knows all about this, I've probably stood at this podium and talked less than 10 times, maybe 7 or 8. You know, it's not that I went to meetings, but I'm just deathly afraid of podiums, microphones, and putting myself in the spotlight. But obviously that's not the case when we're out there drinking, right? We want to be the center of attention. It's all about me, and it's all about me, and it's all about me. But you know, in my sobriety, they teach us to be humble and to be grateful, and that's kind of where I went. I really have not a clue what to talk about tonight. I'm just going to just see what pops into the old brain, whatever's left. And, hey, who's laughing over there? If you're laughing, you're relating, so, you know. Just remember that. You know, and that's funny. Mickey Bush talks about, you know, if you're laughing, you're relating. And it's kind of funny. If we take a trip somewhere with my family, I'm real big on listening to CDs. Back when we got sober, though, we had the cassettes. And I think I shared this at one of the meetings. I went back, and I probably had 10 or 12 of some of my favorite cassettes, and I had them all put on CDs. And a couple of my favorites, my very first speaker meeting was Herman L. out of Los Angeles. He came up to St. Paul's. Albert, you might remember that. In September of 1988, Herman came up and spoke at St. Paul's. And I had all those CDs, and so, you know, when we go on these trips, I say, honey, you don't mind if, you know, she wants to listen to Tim McGraw and all this stuff, and, you know, and I want to listen to Alcoholics, So anyway, so we play these CDs, and this all has something to do with if you're laughing and you're relating. And Herman and Mickey Bush, and I'm playing all these things. And Keith D. from Lake Tahoe, I heard him. He talks about, anyway. So, yeah. So anyway, so if you're laughing, you're relating. And so something funny would come up, and I would just be busting up. And sometimes tears coming out of my eyes. I look over at my wife, and she's like, what's so goddamn funny about that? You know, my wife, she's a normie, and she don't relate. You know, she don't understand. You know, I remember Herman very well. I just listened to him last week. He talked about when he went to his first meeting that the first guy that came up and spoke, he says, hi, my name's San Quentin Bob, and I'm an alcoholic. And Herman's like, holy shit, you know, there's prisoners here. You know? And then the next guy that came up, he was, remember Herman talked about, he was, that he got his, he had a wooden leg, and he said, I acquired that by doing some social drinking underneath the freight train. And, you know, and everybody starts busting up laughing, you know. Well, only people like us can relate to stuff like that, and so if you're laughing, you're relating, and normies just don't understand. I love this program to death. I really do. I live and breathe this program. I wouldn't trade it for the world. I asked Bill tonight, I said, you know, I don't go to this meeting too often. You know, is there anything you want me to talk about? And, you know, he just said, talk about your spirituality. Talk about, you know, how you succeed in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it pretty much sums it up on that last paragraph right there. It says, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us that we cannot do for ourselves. And you know, it just gives me goosebumps. Because my last name is Muniz, and I'm in a hard-headed Portuguese, and I don't listen to nobody, and I don't believe in nobody. I just believe in myself. I do what I want, when I want, and where I want. And I don't care who I hurt or get in the way when I do that. So it was real hard for me to turn it over. I had a few bouts at trying to get sober. But in September of 1988, September 9th, September 10th was, I remember it like it was yesterday, the incomprehensible demoralization. And we all know what that's all about. You know, briefly it was, you know, 3 o'clock in the morning. You just run out of alcohol. You're spinning like a kite in a 40-mile-an-hour wind. And you just, or it's 10 till 2, and you're getting low on alcohol. You don't have a license because you've been arrested for DUI numerous times. And you're scared to go to the liquor store. You're calling people to go get you some liquor. And, you know, that night, September 9th or 10th, whatever it was, after 2 a.m., that I didn't make it to the store, you know, that's when the suicidal tendencies hit, the incomprehensible demoralization. It was just insane, you know. And I always want to remember that because that's where my drinking is going to take me. You know, like Mickey Bush says, we don't go out and have little slippy poos. You know, Mickey Bush says he goes out and drinks and ends up in a blackout and he ends up in chains in front of a judge on a murder charge. I don't know if anybody in here made it to the Mickey Bush conference that we had. I think it was in 2011 over at St. Mary's. He gave an excellent talk. Excellent talk. I listen to that CD at least once a month. And it never gets old. Never gets old. But anyway, the key to my success is what that is there. You know, God is doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. I always like the saying that Dr. Phil says, you know, somebody that he's talking to and somebody thinks they have all the answers and Dr. Phil says, well, how's that working for you? You know? It's not, you know. In my sobriety, that morning that I was telling you about the incomprehensible demoralization, the suicidal tendencies, you know, we all carried guns and we all carried knives and we all did that stuff and I just couldn't do it. I could not pull the trigger, you know. It was sitting out on the counter, as it always is when we're partying, and I just couldn't do it. You know, I was crying immensely. The dope ran out, the booze ran out, everybody left. You know, it's funny how that works, right? You run out of dope and you ain't got no friends. You run out of booze and you ain't got no friends. And that's the way it was for me. And they all left, and thank God, you know, I didn't do what I wanted to do. Because at the time, it seemed for me that was the only way out. You know, because the insanity was just crazy. You know? But the denial that I had, and we all got it. It's not no hard-headed Portuguese. I mean, I must have had a thick ice, you know, brick wall around me this thick. Because my family tried to help me, my sister, you know, people would come over to the house. Hey, Nunes, just checking on you, man. You all right? Hey, I'm fine, dude. What's your problem, man? I'm way better than you. What the hell? You know, we give it that. You know, we always have to have that look good. Our ass could be falling off, broke, busted, disgusted, whatever Mickey Bush talks about, but yet we're going to let people know that we're fine. You know, that we're okay. Just leave just leave me alone and everything will be fine. Yeah, so, you know, the denial for me about killed me. You know, it almost did. It took me to the depths of that incomprehensible demoralization in September of 1988. That morning, and I've shared this story numerous times, that morning it got to be 5:30, 6 o'clock. I love what Herman says. He says, daylight caught me drinking again. You know, and sure enough, daylight came, and you know, I didn't have no booze. I'm trying to come off whatever I was doing, and you know, here it is, 6 a.m. I'm looking through the yellow pages for the closest place I could go or call, and I kind of left something out too. You know, in that incomprehensible demoralization, you know, God has a sense of humor. You know, so you call the 1-800 cocaine hotline or something. Nobody friggin' answered. Holy crap! You know? And so you call somebody else, another hotline, the line's busy, you know? It's like, holy shit! This is a true story, man. So I was just, it's like, wow, does he really want me to pull the trigger here or what? So, getting back to the denial thing, you know, it gets to be 6 a.m., it's like, I don't want to call these people at 6 a.m., I'll wait till 7, you know? So here comes 7 o'clock, you know, I try and take a shower, I try and get out of that, whatever I was in. You know, and here comes the look good, right? Hello? Hi. My name's Ty, and, you know, I'm just waking up this morning, and I'm thinking that I might have a problem with alcohol. You got any openings? Holy shit, you know, I've just been on a two-day run, and things, I have suicidal tendencies, and I'm sitting there going, oh, I just woke up, and I thought I'd check myself into a rehab. I mean, that's so far from reality, you know. You know, Frank Ross, God rest his soul, man, I love that man to death. About a week into it, he reminded me that. He goes, you remember that phone call you made at 7 o'clock that you told me you just woke up and thought you might want to better your life and check into a rehab? So that's the denial that I had. You know, darn near killed me. Hi, Chris. How are you? You know, when I checked into that place, I walked in there and I put the keys on the counter and I just started crying. You know, all Frank could do was just hug me. And he said the most famous word that we always say in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's going to be okay and you don't ever have to live like this again. You know, this great program saves so many people if you will let it, if you will stay humble, if you will put your guard down and just be willing, honest, open-mindedness, and willing to follow these steps, to follow suggestions from the prisoner from San Quentin, the guy with the wooden leg, you know, the biker with the tattoos. You know, my first sponsor, and I'm going to say his last name just so you guys don't confuse it with another David L., but it was David Lady. And you remember David? Huh? He's still sober today. And, you know, you guys, for me, I came from a good family. I came from a middle class. I played three sports. You know, I got straight A's. I made honor roll. All that stuff, you know, that the good kid was supposed to do. And my first stint at sobriety, you know, people tried to help me and I went to meetings. My hard-headedness, you know, I was up here. It's like, what are these stupid people on all these bikes and leathers and tattoos? What the hell do they know about helping me? You know, that was my attitude. But I tell you what, the fifth chapter saved my life. Bob D, Johnny Mack. Everybody knows Johnny Mack. David Lady, Bobby D. Saved my life. And I took suggestions from people that I thought I was better than. You know, I had to get humble. I had to realize that drugs and alcohol was an equal opportunity employer. It'll grab anybody, any place, any time. You know, we are all the same in here, people. You know, we all walk the same. This is it. So getting back to the spirituality, the God thing, I remember Frank Ross. You know, I worked with Frank a lot, you know, and I always had questions. You know, I had to ask Frank, how do I know if God's working in my life? And that's when I learned about the phrase that a coincidence is God working anonymously, you know. I don't remember the exact thing that would happen, but I would ask Frank, is that God? And he said, who else put that person in your life? Who else would do something like that for you? It's like, wow. And I said, Frank, how do I get God's message? He said, go to meetings. Listen. Just listen. You know, even God sends me messages even in everyday life, everyday work. It doesn't even have to be at a meeting. I remember I was out, we were bailing hay out of Boswell's, and we were out there at the Holman Ranch, real close to I-5, And I remember the foreman of that ranch, he said, hey, Ty, when the sun hits that mountain, the dew's going to be coming in, so you better be done baling. You know, I've been baling hay since I was this tall. What's this guy going to be telling me? That was my attitude. Why is he telling me how to do my job? You know, yeah, I watch the sun, yeah. And it kind of went like this. But sure enough, the sun kissed those mountains, and the dew started coming in, and sure enough, half an hour after the sun went down, we were dewed out and done. And I didn't realize that God sent that message to me, and I didn't realize it till the next day. It's like, holy crap. You know, this guy came along, and anyway, the story is that, you know, God does work anonymously, you know, and we just have to learn to decipher, hopefully, what's good and what's not. You know, because surely there was times, I remember being at the Aware building. Some people remember the Aware building. And Big Tony, Danielle Tony, I remember up there, he was thumping one day and he said, yeah, when you guys get a year, you get to take one shot in New Year's. One shot. I leaned over to Johnny Mac and I said, one shot of alcohol? Oh, Mac said, don't listen to Big Tony. He's just messing with people. You know, because when we come in here, we're so fresh. You know, like me, I didn't want to go back. I did not want to go back. And so somebody would tell, I'm like a little puppy waiting for you to throw the ball. You know, it's like, what are you going to tell me now? What are you going to tell me now? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? That was like kind of my attitude. And I believe I thought, whoa, we get one shot. I said, do we get two shots with 2 years? You know? So I was very gullible. And Mac and David and Doc, and you know, that's when they taught me that, you know, anytime you hear something in a meeting, just run it by your sponsor, you know, before you act on it. You know? And so I had to do that numerous times. I'm so grateful, you guys. I mean, I'm up here just having a gratitude attack right now. I look out across the room. I know a few people, but I always like to see just fresh faces. I mean, people that I don't even know. You know, it's so nice to come up here and give the hugs to strangers. And this program is just so awesome, you know. It hasn't all been a bed of roses for me. Nora and I were sharing our cancer stories. I did have about the cancer in 1989. This is when I had to learn that God will not give you anything that you can't handle. Yep, that's right. It's true. No matter how bad you think you're having it, you're going to pull through, because it wouldn't be presented to you if God didn't think you couldn't handle it. 1989, I spent... my dad was fortunate enough to put me up in a Motel 6 in Santa Barbara, and I attended the Cancer Foundation there in Santa Barbara. And I went to meetings over there at Fresh Faces. And you can't sit on your butt. You know, that focal point, you know, it's all about me, all about me. That's when you got to stand up and you got to ask for help. You know, it's interesting that CD that I listened to from Herman L. in 1988 and Mickey Bush from 2011, the similarities of that, even though it's, well, I have so many years anyway, apart, they both talk about that the secret to this is to ask for help. I don't know if you guys listen to Mickey Bush, but he says, pray to God? Why do I want to pray to God? He'll know where I'm at. You know? But the whole secret, like Mickey Bush talks about, is that, you know, that he's been in and out of prison all his life, but that one last time that he got sober, he was in that state of mind or whatever where he just said, please help me, God, help me. You know? And if you listen to the CD, you know, God just said, you know, Mick, I've just been waiting for you to ask. And he sent him over to a 12-step fellowship like this. And Mickey Bush has been sober 28 plus years. And Herman is the same way. When Herman talked about that, he says, if you don't like God, latch on to my God. Latch on to me. I'll share. You know? Latch on to something other than ourselves. You know? Anyway. I just can't really stress enough about, what the hell was I talking about? Santa Barbara. Oh yeah, 1994, I had a bladder tumor. I had to go back to Santa Barbara. They had to pull that out. You know, my life really hasn't, you know, 2 bouts of cancer, that's no big deal to me. It's not. Because you live with it. And this fellowship, you people, got me through it. Without drinking. Without using any mind-altering substances. You know? The tools that I've acquired... Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's right. You know, this program has given me so many tools. But the whole secret is, and like Frank stressed to me, that you got to know when to open up the toolbox. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't fix anything if the toolbox is closed. And, you know, sometimes I get friendly reminders like from my wife, don't you need a meeting? Isn't somebody celebrating a birthday this week? Yes, dear. Or like Bill, you know, he calls me up out of the blue. Hey, do you want to speak at our meeting, you know, on May 28th, blah, blah, blah. You know, and I was telling Nora, you know, my hands are all sweaty. I don't, even after 25 years, my tummy was turning, and you get scared. But like I told Nora, Max said, never say no. If somebody asks you to chair, somebody asks you to service, coffee, wash the dishes, whatever, you got to do it. You know, you don't, because, and here's the God thing again. Somebody's coming up, Bill. God sent Bill to ask me, you know, that he's the messenger. You know, that's how I get my messages, is through this program. And in my life today, I got, you know, I always tell my wife, you know, I say, I ain't got no friends. You know, but that's okay. But I have people that I associate with. You know, because my deal with the friend thing, you know, I had 10 or 12 guys that I hung with. You know, they were my buddies, my partners, homeboys, whatever you want to call them. But you know what? When I went to rehab and I got out, you know how many people, those guys came and seen me? Two. I did have two. And one still comes around, but the other went off too. And some of them died. A lot of them are dead. Yeah, we don't even get into that subject. You know? You know, all my friends now are dead or sober. Pretty much. But the core that I have now, and I like to talk, let me talk about the core in 1988. I talk about the class of 1988, which was Doc and David and Johnny Mack, and there was Rick and Jerry and Stacy, David's sister, was around back then. But all we talked about, we went to a meeting, like tonight, then we went to the meeting after the meeting, and then we talked about, okay, where are we going tomorrow? Where's the new meeting tomorrow? Get out our list. Okay, we'll all go there. And we all go there. If one of us didn't show up, back then we had to go to a payphone or somebody's house to call them. You know, no cell phones. And somebody called, hey, you didn't make it to the meeting. What's going on? You know, so it was a tight-knit group that our sole purpose was in life is to stay sober. You know, because Frank drilled that into me. You know, before I left, he said, I need you to write down some of your priorities here, what you're going to do when you leave. Oh, all right. Get a job. Find a girlfriend. Find a new place to live. Tears it all up, throws it away. Do it again, Nunes. All right. Change it around. Get a girlfriend. Get a job. Throw it away. You know, finally, after 5 or 6 times, Frank says, you got it all wrong, man. There's just one answer to those questions. It's to stay sober. Because when you stay sober, trust in God, things happen. Sometimes good, sometimes bad. But when the bad happens, what do? We go to the toolbox, which is sponsor, phone numbers, meetings, and we do what we're taught to do in here. You know? Mac always said, drive to my house, call me, but whatever you do, don't pick up. Don't. Stand on your head, run down the street. If you're in a bad place, don't have a car to leave, take off walking. Just get the hell out of there if you don't feel good about the situation. Because your sole purpose in life is to not have another drink. Because once we have that drink, that pill, that line, or whatever, it starts a process that we can't handle. We know that. You know, there's... I can talk about Indian Eddie. Robert, you remember Indian Eddie? Yep. I heard he was in Florida somewhere, but... You know, they talked about... He talked about the good and the evil. And we all have good and evil inside of us. And you always wonder which one's going to win. But you know which one's going to win is the one you feed. Right? So I always got to remember that. I still have it in me to go out and get drunk, to get thrown in jail, to end up in the hospital, get beat up or beaten up or something. We all have that. But man, I need that person to stay asleep, to stay away. You know? That never goes away. Sometimes the cravings never go away. You know, I'll be on vacation with my wife and you see some people up there playing quarters and doing shots or doing whatever the games they do with the funnel. I'm going, that ain't shit, honey. Those guys are terrible bunch of shit. She goes, don't go show them how to do it, honey. You know? But anyway, life is so good. Life is so good. You know, there is ups and there's downs. I kind of like it when there's the downs because I kind of look forward to when it's going to be good because I look for the signs. You know, I'll go through a period sometimes where there's just 3 or 4 days. Sometimes it's a week, 2 weeks, where just shit happens. And it's like, holy crap, God, when are you going to get me out of this? You know, and I kind of look for the signs and it happens, you know. Trust in God, clean house, and everything will be all right. I keep watching that clock and it just goes slow and slow. I was up there bargaining with these two, the birthday girls, it's like, hey, they got birthdays, let them share for 10 minutes. You know, even when I got sober, I thought to myself, what am I going to do for fun? You know, what the hell am I going to do now? And so I did things that, you know, sometimes we dream about. You know, I did the bungee jump once. I learned how to scuba dive. You know, I did all these things because I wanted to experience life. I wanted to experience life. I got married when I got out of rehab. Kelly's still in the program. Helped her raise her 3 kids. And we got divorced after being together for 10 years. Boy, cancer was easy compared to going through a divorce. You're talking about getting a person back into meetings. Well, David L., man, he had to tell me, hey, Nunes, this is not Divorce Anonymous. I said, I know, but I got to share. I can't keep this inside of me, you know? You know? You know, they always say that. You know, if you've got a thought that might become an action, you better get that thought out of there before it becomes the action. Yeah. And so, you know, if there's one thing about my divorce, I got to thank Kelly for getting me back into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because it got me back in there. I was going to meetings almost every day just to try and keep my sanity. But anyway, getting back to the having fun thing, after I made it through that divorce, you know, I was just kind of just trudging. You know, I didn't want to be one of those divorce guys, you know. But there again, God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. You know, He put my current wife into my life. She's 12 years younger than me. My sister set us up, and I told my sister, I said, what in the hell is this good-looking girl? Never been married, no kids, no... I mean, just the perfect setup here, you know? And I'm just going, what is she going to you know, yeah, I like her, you know, yeah. But the secret is we got to get her to like me. But what are you guys laughing for? You know what it's all about. Come on, Bob. Wish upon a lucky star. But you know what? I don't want to lose sight of the point here, is that God did for me that I couldn't do for myself. And as Nora said, I have two beautiful girls. They're 11 and 8. I was 43 years old when my first one was born. And keep in mind, I don't know if I said it, but in 1988, my first cancer was testicular cancer. So it was kind of iffy where I was going to have kids or not. You know, the second cancer was bladder tumor. But so here is God working in my life. Somehow he waves the magic wand and this girl likes me. And, you know, we get married. But anyway, that morning when Sydney was born, you guys, I cried. There was no bungee jump. There was no scuba dive. There was no nothing that could even come close to the euphoric high that I had when my daughter was born. And my sponsor said, God kind of outdid you, didn't he? I said, yes, he did. Because there I was trying to take control of my own life. I'm going to have fun the way I want to have fun. But he set the stage for me, for right now, that, wow. You know, when my second one was born, same thing. It's just unbelievable. I am truly, truly grateful to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did Narcotics Anonymous for five years when I first got here. And I made the switch just for the simple fact that it seemed like I never did go out and think, self, I'm going to buy an 8-ball tonight and stay up here a few days or a half an ounce or whatever you guys do. Back then, you guys remember the time when, oh, this is AA, isn't it? Sorry about that. I remember when a half a gram used to last like 9 hours when you first started out. Progression is terrible, isn't it? Yeah. Drinking and drugging was easy until the progression kicks in, then our addiction takes off and we go broke. Anyway. I know, strike me dead for talking about drugs in AA meeting. But anyway. I'm looking at the clock. I have to remember that, yeah, I just didn't think I was going to go out and buy dope. I always started with that one beer. That one freaking beer. After work, let's go have a beer. I'll buy a couple of coldies, you know, on the way home. All right. And that one beer, you know, would just lead to just chaos. You know, somebody told me that drinking is like getting hit by a train. It's not the caboose that'll kill you, it's the first one. You know? And that was my story. Once I took that first drink, I could not tell you what in the goddamn hell was going to happen to me. It was off to the races, man. And that was so sad because I thought I was in control. I thought I had it going on. I really did. I hurt so many people in my life with drinking, not only family, significant others, good friends. You guys know the story, you know. So I'm so grateful to this program. It taught me a new way to live. I wouldn't trade it for the world. Just stick around. Stick around. Hopefully you'll catch alcoholism before the night's over, you know. If you don't think you're alcoholic today, just come to a few meetings and try just stick around. Am I getting close? All right. You know, and I'll always leave you with this prayer that Herman said that that's just phenomenal to me, and I'll leave it with you. He's always said, thank you, God, for what you've given me. Thank you, God, for what you've taken away. But most of all, thank you for what you left me. Thank you. Hi, I'm Alcoholics.